Welcome to my podcast, All Things Agriculture. I'm your host, Eric Carey, and thank you for tuning in. On this podcast, get to know those who work in agriculture on a daily basis, find out what they do, the challenges and opportunities they face, and what they think the future holds for agriculture. You'll also have a chance to hear what they do for fun when they aren't working hard to feed the world. If you're watching on YouTube, please consider subscribing to my channel and leaving a thumbs up and a comment below. If you prefer the audio version, you can listen for free on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Pocket Casts, and Radio Public. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please email me at allthingsagr@gmail.com. Thank you and enjoy the episode. All right, we're up and running. Hey everyone, how you doing? Good to be back. It's been a hot minute, couple months.
Been a mess.
You could say that. Yeah, it's so I finished in May, took the late spring, summer into fall off, busy with crops. You know, if you're on a farm, you know what that's like. And I've been trying to. Well, we filmed this podcast originally back in the summertime. Didn't work. Well, it worked. Video was absolutely dreadful. I didn't put it up. We said we'd reshoot it. Finally got around to reshooting it, and it's kind of been one thing after another. Equipment malfunction. Dog wasn't feeling. Brian had a dog here earlier. He just had surgery. He wasn't the most cooperative, so he...
He's been doped up on pain meds now and hopefully falling asleep.
Yeah. What did he tear a ligament or something?
Yeah, in his leg. And he had a band put in. So
poor guy.
I don't know. He's doing pretty good.
He's a giant baby, though. That, if you ever seen his dog, what kind of dog is it?
He's a red-nosed pit. He's 85 pounds of pure muscle.
He has a head on it like a football. Yeah. That's what I always say. He has a head like a football. Very nice dog, though. Very, very friendly. Anyway, that's irrelevant to why you're here. So for all of you who do not know, this is Brian Streb. I guess...
Hello.
You got the floor, Brian. Go ahead and why don't you introduce yourself.
So I'm Brian. Eric's asked me to do this podcast now a few times. Basically, I'm an HVAC tech, which is something different that... Eric doesn't really, well, he deals with it, but he's a farmer, so.
Yeah, we deal with everything in some way, shape, or form. Right. Yeah, you aren't technically agriculture,
right?
But what you do is ingrained in agriculture and actually involves everyone who owns a home,
true.
Essentially.
Yep. Yeah, so HVAC is actually HVAC-R. Stands for heating, ventilation, AC, and refrigeration. I do mostly heating and AC, very little refrigeration, and we really don't do any venting. In fact, we just had a job where the exhaust vents were leaking, and my boss didn't put them in, and he's like, nope, we're not touching that. That's not us.
Yeah, so. Is there a liability issue there if you go into a job that...
You know, if you accept a job, you kind of got to see it through to the end. So if there's problems that arise, you got to deal with those problems. If there's problems to begin with, then it's better to say no. And they can either find the original people who put it in or find a company that was willing to say yes. So.
Yeah, there must be a reason they haven't called back the original contractor if they're calling you, right?
Well, we're kind of like the, for this one company, we're kind of like the fix-it-all person. So, I mean, we do their AC and heating, but then there's other things that we've done for them that kind of go outside the realm. We've done a little bit of roofing for them, a little bit of drainage, yeah. It's...
Really?
Yeah, this one company they wanted to blame us for the it's like a mini mall, I guess you could call it, anyways, there's a shop in it that had a leak, and it was coming off of the ductwork, so naturally they think we were the culprits. So we went up and looked at it. Well, this company just, the owner of this company just had the roof redone, which he tried to rope us in to moving all the units. And my boss was like, nope, not going to do that. And so the roof got redone. There's plenty of standing water on the roof. And then it's, so they had this leak. So they thought it was our AC was condensing and on the ductwork. Like if the sun hits the ductwork and the AC is going, it can condense and then you can get drips and what looks like leaks. So we insulated the snot out of both units in this company. And then we realized we actually put up a drain pan just to catch the water that was coming in. And so,
you were keeping all water, even if you did have any condensation, it was contained.
Contained. Yeah. And would drain. But, after we finished it, I looked outside and I'm like, wait a second, there's an exhaust fan right above one of these leaks. And I'm like, they think it's ductwork because when they looked up into it, there was actually a register inside the building underneath it. So it looks like it's ductwork, but it's not. It's an exhaust fan for something completely different. We didn't put that in. We ain't touching that. So my boss did alert the owner. I don't know what he's going to do about it. So
yeah, it's.
But we've washed our hands, so to speak. We've basically shown, hey, it's not us, even though they want to blame it on us.
Call the ventilation guy. Or is that you too?
Well, it could be us.
But you didn't put it in.
Right.
So it's not your fault. Oh. Yeah. I mean, whenever you work with people, you know, you're trying to keep customers happy, and that's got to be a challenge.
Yeah. But I mean, at some points you can say that, hey, we've done X, Y, and Z, and it proves that it's not our issue. You know, we've basically taken ourselves out of the equation. So
I guess kind of we'll backtrack a little bit. How did you even get into the HVAC
business? Good question. So I did not go to school for HVAC. I've been working now for my boss, Jim Swayze, Swayze's AC and Heating, for about 4 years. And basically what happened was my final semester of college, I went and studied abroad in Salamanca. I needed like one credit or one course to graduate. I think it was for my minor in Spanish. I think all my other stuff was done. So it basically was like just a semester abroad to have a great time.
Where's Salamanca? Is that Spain?
That's Spain, yeah. It's about, I think it's about 2 or 3 hours from Madrid, north of Madrid.
Is Madrid the capital?
Yeah, and it's like pretty much basically in the center of the country. And so I did my study abroad there. When I was there, I got into teaching English just to kids, and I really liked it. And my contact there was like, all right, go back to the U.S., take a course, and then come on back. So I did that. To continue to teach. So I took the course and then told her, hey, I'm ready to come back. And she really couldn't help me get back. So I looked at other options. And I found a 9-month program to teach English to people within Madrid. It was to business professionals. And
so you were taking native Spanish speakers who knew, how much English did these people know?
The classes they gave me, they knew like a little bit to like fluent. I didn't get like, I did have one course that was rough beginners, but they eventually pulled that course away from me because the company that bought the course wanted somebody that could speak both English and Spanish fluently. My Spanish isn't fluent. It's good enough to get by, but it's not fluent. So I think they rated it. Their ratings were 1 through 10. And the lowest course I taught was a level 4. The highest I taught was a level 9. So, nine, to be honest, 9 and 10 they're both fluent. So, and even 8 is fairly fluent. So
what's it like teaching? Like, I mean, for probably anyone who's listening to this, I imagine is a native English speaker. Like, we don't think about what it's like to speak English because it just comes out. But when you actually have to teach it, it's English is a very difficult language.
Yeah, it is
to learn.
The hardest things too are like actions with verbs. It's been a while since I've taught English, but there's a word for it. But simple thing like go out, go up, go in, go up, go to, you know, a verb with a preposition following it can change the actual meaning, and that's really confusing to them. They kind of have to just memorize them. But because we're teaching solely in English and we have an English accent, they learn better than if you have a non-native speaker teaching the language, because then you don't, your ear doesn't hear it quite as well. You hear the accented version.
Okay. I gotcha.
So I did that for 9 months, and then I came back to the U.S. I really tried to stay. In fact, I had one of my Spanish friends. He scoured the web he scoured the Spanish government websites to figure out how I could get another visa and all that. And I would have had to have been making like 25,000 euros, which I wasn't even making anywhere close to that. So yeah, he's like, yeah, I guess we really just don't want you in our country. So, but that's cause they want Europeans within Europe. Yeah. So if you have a European passport, you can go anywhere within Europe. Or even like Canadian passports and Australian passports, you can work your way around, cause they originally are from the UK, and that before Brexit, you could work your way through that. Anyways,
oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so I really couldn't. Plus, I had some family things to deal with. So, came back, and for about 2 weeks, wasn't doing anything. I really didn't have a plan. And so, my boss's son asked me one Saturday if I wanted to go out on Cougar Lake onto his boat. And so, I said yes, and I told him I was looking for a job, had no clue what I wanted to do, and he asked me if I wanted to work for his dad, and I was like, sure, why not? And so here we are 4 years later, an HVAC tech, and I know a heck of a lot more than I did than on my first day.
Yeah, so, you're about as green as they come going into it, weren't
you? I was really green.
So you just kind of got thrown right into the fire right from the get-go?
I don't know if I was exactly thrown in the fire. Now, don't get me wrong. So, obviously, at the very first year, I pretty much was just going on all the calls and just being a helper, you know, learning the different parts, learning the different sizes. Shoot, I didn't know the difference between a quarter inch and a 5/16 inch nut driver, you know. And so my boss, when he needed a part, would be like, hey, I need this part from the truck. It's located here. And I go and get it. Especially at the beginning, half the time I'd grab the wrong part.
But he's a very patient man.
Yeah, well, mostly, yeah. But I do remember, like, probably about a month into working, my boss and his wife went on vacation and left me on call. That was terrifying, because I had no idea, like, you know, you don't know what the calls are coming in. Like, I didn't have any specific calls, like service calls that I had to go do, but if there were any problem calls, I had to go out on them. And so basically I survived that week. Basically, I'd get my boss on the phone and he'd kind of walk me through what I needed to do. So
that's honestly, that can sometimes be the best way to learn, to a point, when you just get thrown into it like that, either sink or swim. And
well, basically that's kind of been our motto as I've worked more and more. Nowadays he kind of sends me on everything unless he's specifically like a customer specifically asks for him, or it's something that he knows is like a little bit trickier, or it's a two-person job. And basically if I ever have questions, I can always call him and be like, hey, I got this issue. I've done this. What do you think? So, I mean, like I said, nowadays I'm much better at diagnosing and fixing, and I don't need to call him, which in and of itself also pisses him off sometimes because he's like, why hasn't he called me? But
it's almost like maybe,
he just kind of wants an update. But yeah, no, I've definitely gotten a lot more confident, in going to a customer's house. And even basically it's gotten to the point where I'm like, just send me the address. I'll go over there and I'll ask the customer, hey, what's not working, And a lot of times I can now figure it out. So today, actually, I had a call that I couldn't figure out, which was really frustrating. I had a water heater. With all the rain, this lady's basement flooded.
Oh, yeah.
So the furnace still worked, but the water heater, there were lights on the valve, but nothing, it wasn't turning on. And so I'm like, oh, we got light. So that's great. We got power down here. I checked it was a vented, power vented water heater. So it had a motor on the top of it. Checked the motor. That seemed to all be good. The pressure switch seemed to all be good. My guess was that the glow igniter, was burnt out. I mean, they're very low to the ground. The water hits it, probably shorted it. Well, that would have been great, but I can never get the motor to start. Because the very first thing that needed to start on this water heater was this draft motor. And in calling my boss, I'm like, it could be the gas valve. Like, it could all be interconnected. Because they do communicate to each other, even though the motor is up here and the gas valve's down here. There is a cord, a special pinned cord that goes between the two. And so I was on the phone with her husband, and the wife was in front of me, and I'm like, all right, so I think I can put in a new gas valve, but this water heater is also 14 years old. Do you really want to do that? It's possible that it goes next year. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't convince him to just change out the water heater. And he wanted the gas valve changed out. So I went back to the truck and I'm like, wait a second. I got a gas valve and a burner. That would work. But then I don't have anything to control the draft motor. So unfortunately I had to just get the part number and leave it, and we'll order the part and hopefully get it out to them early next week. So it's kind of disappointing just in the fact that I couldn't fix it, and that they also wanted to save this water heater when in all reality, the thing should go.
Yeah. I think I told you before I lived in this house, I lived in the tenant house, which is on the other side of the farm, and I think that water heater was that was pushing like 20 years old.
Yeah.
And I knew it was getting bad. Well, the water heater in this house is, I think, 15 years old. And when I lived at the other house, I'd take a shower, and after about 5 minutes, usually the hot water was gone. It was turning to lukewarm. So long story short, we ended up taking the water heater out. And as they were pulling the water heater up the stairs of the basement, we were moving it out. The actual floor, the bottom of the hot water heater just blew open.
And did it spill a bunch of sandy water everywhere?
Yeah, they lost some stuff, but it was nothing major. Yeah, it was full of calcium and you name it.
Which I'm sure this water heater that I was working on is full of, because I doubt that they had ever flushed it because there was no drains in this basement. So,
oh. Yeah. Yeah, because the old house I lived in, you could flush it, and there was an old hand-dug well where you could just run a hose to it we didn't use it anymore.
Right.
And you could dump water down into it. It's kind of funny. I have a relative who used to live there, and an aunt, and she said the best-tasting water was that hand-dug well. The thing is it's wide open on top, so any sort of rat or critter that ever wanted to, that God put on this earth could just walk over and fall into the thing and die. Yeah. So you're more likely than not just like drinking the brew of dead bugs.
was it like a cistern kind of thing?
No, it was hand dug in the ground.
Oh, wow.
In the bottom of the basement. And my dad, geez. So when they shut that down, they actually drilled one outside. They took boards and it's all covered up, but there's still a gap. So you can take like a hose and you can drain whatever you need to. Now the house I live in now, this one, is a sump pump down there, so
yeah.
You can drain it. And speaking of that, I got a little bit of water in my basement from the rain we got, and not much, but there is a little bit of water. I ought to get that pumped out. It would sit and evaporate, but there's a sump pump there. Might as well use it. So
right.
It's just a matter of opening the window and getting the hose out and having someone hold the hose so the hose doesn't blast back.
Yep.
So, but
put a rock on it.
Yeah, well, that, or I just had to get more of the hose out the window. It was when I went down and saw it the other day, it was still raining. I'm like, oh, I'll just do it now.
Gotcha.
And I was kind of like, had to get back to the farm, and I'm like, screw it, I'll just do it some other time. Of course, it's been like a day now, and I forget about it, but
mm-hmm.
I gotta write it down, get it done. So if you're a homeowner, for in terms of maintenance of hot water heater and stuff like what's a good way to keep your equipment?
So hot water heaters definitely need to be flushed at least once a year, probably even twice a year is a good thing.
Do you mean by flush?
So there's a little drain at the base of them. You hook up a hose to it and literally just turn on that drain. Don't touch anything else. Let the water pressure, the incoming water pressure, basically push out the sediment. Especially with city water too. City water tends to have a lot of sediment. That's really what takes out water heaters, is they collect sediment, and then the burner underneath isn't really heating the water. It's heating the sediment, and it creates hot spots and eventually it pops. So,
traps. So like trap heater, like what is
it? Well, the sediment will trap the heat.
Yeah, okay. It
basically, you got the burner and then the sediment's right on the bottom and it collects and collects and collects. So the burner's burning the bottom of the tank, but the heat isn't going into the water. It's going into the bottom of the tank, and eventually that's going to burn out. So it's not really heating the water.
Okay. And it corrodes and it rusts and yeah. Yep. Why would city water have more sediment?
I think it's due to the pressures that they have too. It's just something I've noticed that city water has quite a bit, like Ithaca city water has quite a bit of sediment in it. There's just minerals in general.
Compared to just a regular well water.
I mean, well water has plenty of sediment too, but.
But even more, you're saying.
I've just noticed it. I think it's city of Ithaca.
Okay. Anecdotally, you notice it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's just, I find that surprising.
But you also lose water heaters too on city water because of the pressure being higher. So if you don't have like a house regulator and you've got the city water, which normally is pumping into a house at about 80 PSI or higher, that going into a water tank will take them out 5 to 10 years. Just that constant pressure.
So you have to do like a drop the, if you could get a regulator and drop the pressure down.
There's a couple of things. One is to either put in a house regulator, which isn't a bad idea in general. The other thing we generally do when we're installing a new water heater is we put in a domestic water expansion tank. It's a little white tank that takes, it's another expansion tank, but it takes the pressure of the water going into the tank versus the water heater taking the extra pressure. Oh. So if there's changes in it, the surges, the tank takes that. because there's a bladder in it, can expand and contract.
Okay.
Versus the actual water tank, you know, so that if that expansion tank goes, that's a $50 part. You can replace that. If the water heater goes, that's a $2,000 to $3,000 part.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And a lot more of a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're without hot water heater.
Exactly.
Without hot water for a while.
So, in terms of furnaces, those should be cleaned once a year, especially your oil furnaces, but also your high efficiency furnaces. Oil furnaces tend to get a lot of carbon buildup, and so the nozzles will get clogged, the filters will get packed. So it's good to keep those clean. You can kind of get away with it with oil filters. I've seen some people that haven't serviced them in forever. Somebody sitting across from me.
Okay. I was waiting for that to come up.
It's all right. Yeah. Like I said, you can get away with it, and it actually really won't damage the furnace itself. The ones that actually get damaged are the high efficiency ones. If you don't keep those clean and serviced, what ends up happening is, so there's two heat exchangers in a high efficiency furnace. The top one's where the flame is, you know, you see your burners burning, and that's where the heat goes. But on the bottom, there's a collection box where condensation happens. And one of the biggest things that we do is we vacuum those out when we service them, because sediment and just stuff gets into them. I mean, part of it is just the water, the condensation reacting with the metal creates particulate. And that can plug up the secondary heat exchanger. And if it plugs up, the heat will stay inside of that, and then it'll crack. And when you have a cracked heat exchanger, that's a bad furnace. There's no fix for that. So that's big. Also, changing filters is always good. That way your motor isn't screaming for air. Keeps it cool. Little things too, like pressure switch hoses and burners getting cleaned. So, and then, I mean, AC is another one that once a year, basically once a year maintenance for all of your heating and AC stuff is good to do.
It helps with longevity.
It helps with longevity, and it obviously creates a better relationship with the customer, but like, say you own something that's kind of ancient. You know, you and I both have pretty old equipment. Old equipment isn't necessarily bad, but if you get it constantly serviced, you can start to see, okay, this part might be going, you know? And if you call in the middle of the night, I could say, okay, I know that this part went, I keep it on the truck, or I know that that part went, I'll get it ordered as soon as possible. You know, it makes our job a little bit easier if we've serviced it, because then we've looked at it. We aren't coming upon something brand new that we have no idea what the history is.
Yeah, you haven't.
Plus, you're also a repeating paying customer, so that helps too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of my boss's biggest philosophies is people that get their stuff serviced, they get put on the list. If they have an issue, we get to them as soon as we can. Whereas other people, you come into like January when stuff is breaking, my boss will be literally like, I've got a whole list of people that need stuff fixed. I'm getting to them, and then there's people that are calling saying, hey, this is broken, can you come fix it? And it's like, well, we're 2 weeks out. You want to wait till then?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's just a reality.
Yeah. I mean, no, it really is.
You can't, you know, you have your paying customers, you have your regulars, and they should be serviced first, especially if they've been with you and you're, like you said, you have that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
My dad always says loyalty doesn't really mean a whole lot in a lot of businesses anymore. In a way, it's all bottom line. But, and, you know, I think there's still, and he does too, that loyalty should
mean
a lot. in business.
It should mean something. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's where I think people sometimes they might shop around for stuff just to get the lowest price. Yep. It's like, yeah, yeah, whatever. That you know, that's a fine philosophy, but it's like, I have a guy that's local who I know if something breaks at 10 o'clock at night, I can call him up and he'll be like, either help you over the phone, be there that night, or be like, I'll be there first thing in the morning.
Right.
And it's like, that's...
Well, here's another thing too. I had a call today even. I serviced this guy's boiler probably about 2 weeks ago, and it was running, no problem. The draft motor was kind of loud. I oiled it. Well, he called and he's like, it's really loud. Is there something you can do? So I came back. I sprayed it again. I got the number. And he's actually saying, hey, can we actually just do a change out? I mean, we might look into the price of how much to replace that draft motor, but his boiler is absolutely ancient. And it's a pretty loud draft motor for, you know, trying to sleep at night, you hear this really high-pitched noise. So the guy has heat. It's not like he's without heat, but I know my boss, after telling him today, hey, he wants a new boiler, we're probably going to do it sometime next week. And I know we have calls throughout the week. My boss will probably reschedule one or two of those to try to free up a day just for this one customer. That we've been servicing his boiler since I've been working. And actually, I think my boss, Jim, has been servicing that house for quite a while.
So. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, you know, like I said, sometimes you don't see, in a business like yours, I think you see it, but in some other businesses, you see it, you know, there's a lot more shopping around, and like I said, which is fine.
Oh, there's plenty of shopping around, even in our business. Guys will be, people will call up, say, hey, can I get an estimate for this?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Half the time, my boss is in a very fortunate position due to his longevity and how long he's been doing this and his reputation. If there's a customer that calls and says, hey, I want an estimate, there are times where we'll be like, you know what? I really don't want to do it. And he doesn't have to, because he's got quite a long customer base. But he can also go, okay, let's go see what it is, and then give them the estimate, and then get it done, and get it done properly within a timely manner. So I think it's cool, because a lot of times it's our customers that we've been servicing the equipment that we're doing new equipment installs. You know, we're swapping out the old stuff, and my boss, Jim, put in the old equipment. So that's how long, like, it's a full cycle of this equipment has now lasted 20 years. Let's get it out of here and put in a new one. You know, that's a testament to his reputation and his relationship with his customers.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's really cool. But how long do you say he's been doing it for?
Well, he did a little bit in Houston and then came back to Ithaca for a guy he worked for like 3 months, and then that guy sold the company, and he said the day he quit was he was working a building downtown in Ithaca that was like an apartment building, so a lot of people that were without heat. And he got called back and was like, hey, this little old lady needs heat. You got to go there. And he's like, are you kidding? I've got an apartment here that needs fixing, and I'm in the middle of it. They're like, no, we're pulling you off of that job. And so the maintenance guy of that building was like, hey, Jim, you want to be our maintenance guy for all our properties? He's like, yeah. All right. Let me go run the truck back and drop my keys, and I'll be back in an hour and a half or two. And I'll take care of this. And so he got back to the office, called his wife, who I think was pregnant at the time, and was like, hey, I just quit my job. come bring the van and or bring the car and bring my tools so I can go do this other job. And that's how he started.
Wow, that's a cool story. If it weren't for that little old lady who lost her heat, you might still be working. Wow. Yeah. To get a hole, you know, obviously he's talented in order for the guy just to be like, hey, take the whole thing.
Oh, he used to do actually a lot more commercial, like skyscraper type stuff back in Houston too. Like big air conditioning, big refrigeration, massive stuff. And so this residential stuff that he does now is kind of simple to him.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to worry about like balancing air, airflow has to be right. He doesn't have to worry about like motors that are moving. I know you don't know the numbers, but that are moving a certain amount of air that you have enough makeup air and all that stuff and big honking motors and boards and yeah, lots of ductwork. But he said in Houston he would be on jobs where they'd go floor by floor, but they had to be on radios. Because, like, think of, like, a skyscraper, how big a floor is, you know. It's not like you can scream to the other side of it. So
it's pretty fascinating to think about. You can take a skyscraper, a big building, you can plumb it all, air. And it's pretty amazing to think of, like, you know, you think of, like, before the World Trade Centers went down, how many stories there were.
Right.
And they had to have water at the top. Well, I don't know, the top floor, but they more likely than not had water all the way to the very top. How much pressure?
The pumps and all that, yeah.
Isn't that usually what you have from what I understand, you'd pump it up so many floors, have another pressure tank, pump it up, pump it, and then every...
I think you're right, yeah.
They would have you repressurize it.
Yep.
So that's pretty neat. Something I was going to ask you about when you were talking about skyscrapers. Yeah, I lost it, but it'll come back to me. But there was somewhere I was going to go about when you were talking about how your boss started out doing skyscrapers and yeah. I'm getting old, I guess. Not really, but
he actually started out doing scuba equipment. He was a scuba instructor.
Really?
Yeah, and then he ended up getting hooked up with guys at Carrier. They like offered him a job, and he ended up after he worked. He also was a teacher for a little bit. He taught a tech, you know, people trying to be techs like I am, how to install equipment and whatnot. So he's done quite a lot.
Yeah. Now you're his apprentice.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Learning though. You see yourself doing this long term, you think?
What could. I mean, there's an opportunity for it. There's plenty of, it's not like there's not ever work.
Yeah, especially as time goes on.
Yeah. I we'll see.
It fits into the whole, you know, welding, electrician, like truck driver, like those are
they're in high demand.
Like we've talked about before, how those guys are all leaving, retiring, and there's not many people to fill those shoes. I mean, there's people who could, but they're, you know, I don't know why people aren't doing it.
It's not as attractive as going to college. Although I think there is starting to be a boon to trade schools. People are starting to realize that college is not worth the degree that you get.
The price of admission. The price.
You know, you come out of college with 6 figures in debt and no job, whereas you go to a trade school and... I mean, some companies will pay you to go to trade school, or if not, you would definitely have a job coming out and are making almost 6 figures coming out.
And your debt is peanuts. You know, It's, yeah, it's your tools and whatever literature you need. But yeah, I mean, the tools is probably the most expensive thing you buy when it comes, which isn't cheap, but it's nothing compared to a year of tuition at any most schools.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I agree with, that is definitely more trade school getting, I hope, I think there's more people going to trade school. People are starting to realize that, you know, I think they should be funding BOCES and all that to the nth degree, because that's really where
I wish they did. The Tompkins County one really doesn't have a heck of a lot. It's got a welding program, but that thing filled up. As soon as that class opens up, it fills up. The Syracuse one is very good. That one's got auto, like auto techs, HVAC techs, welding. There's quite a few trades. They do a little bit of electrical. So there's a lot more opportunity for in the Syracuse BOCES.
Ithaca doesn't have
They got a beauty school and a driver's course and welding.
Oh, I looked it up. High school, it was auto, heavy equipment, electric. Those are all gone. Carpentry.
Wow, they were really there back in high school?
Yeah, because Groton, at least.
I wonder if those are student-led.
Oh, those are student. I'm talking about,
like, adult education.
Oh, okay, yeah, we're talking two different things. Yeah, I know, yeah, I don't know. Students, they have all those. I'm not sure if they used to have the adult classes for those or not. Because you're doing, you have to do stuff like that for certification, take BOCES classes.
The certifications I've done, the only one I've done is the universal refrigerant, so I can buy refrigerant legally. Like, it's you have to have basically not a degree, but you have to take a course so you can buy refrigerant. You have to understand the.
Is that regulated?
Yeah, it's fairly regulated. I think this is my card.
There's a million types of refrigerant, aren't there?
Yeah, technician type.
No way.
Type universal. So it's a 4-part test. There's type 1, type 2, type 3, and then like common core or something like that. And each one of those tests are 25 questions. You got to get an 18 or better on each one of them. So.
Once you get it, you're good? Or do you have to constantly?
Yeah, I don't have to do it again. Redo that again. So that's nice.
Yeah.
But it did definitely left me with a lot of questions. Because the people I took that course with, they had all been taking like an air conditioning course. So they had a lot more in-depth knowledge of, like, chillers and low-pressure systems and little basic air conditioners than that type of information than I do. I'm just pretty much good at residential and some commercial.
So you didn't actually take any course with it. You just went and did the certification and. Just show, and these people had been taking a class. It was basically,
there were technically two classes where they went over information, but it was pretty much I just studied for the test and then took it. So, and I passed.
Good enough. You didn't make a fake card,
right?
The black market refrigerant cards.
Well, because if you call up the company, you have to give them like your number, and that's how they.
Is that air gas? Or is that different? That would.
Well,
do they do
air gas? Is technically different. That's not refrigerant. Air gas is like oxygen, acetylene, nitrogen. Those aren't refrigerants.
Well, I didn't know if they handled.
They don't. They don't.
Refrigerants as well.
We don't get our refrigerants from them, and okay. I don't think that's where you. I don't think you can buy refrigerants from Airgas.
Okay, I had no idea. That was just.
But
we do.
We do use them for our nitrogen, oxygen, and acetylene.
Okay.
So, nitrogen, or sorry, oxygen acetylene torch, you know. We use that for AC, brazing copper pipes because they're under pressures of 100 pounds to 400 pounds, especially the liquid line can get up to 400. It can even get higher. Yours are probably on your farm equipment are probably even higher than that, because they're using a propane refrigerant. So anyway, so we use that, and then when we finish a system, we've got it like all piped together. You have to pressure test it, and you pressure test it with nitrogen because it's inert. So that's the only gas that you can release into the atmosphere without penalty. You can no longer just like release any type of refrigerant into the atmosphere. That if you get caught doing that, you can get fined pretty hefty.
Yeah. With all the regulations, and that's why they're going towards these different butane refrigerants,
CO2, ammonia. You said propane. There's another fuel that they're trying to go to just because they're the carbon footprint of them. Like if they get released into the atmosphere, it's not as bad. So no refrigerants now anymore hurt the ozone that are allowed on the market that are made. The only one that still is really used, not that much, but is still used, is R22. That one does still hurt the ozone at like 5% or something like that. I think it has a 0.05 ODP or something like that, which is an ODP is ozone depletion percentage.
Okay.
What does
5% mean?
So it destroys like, I forget how they calculated it, but there's an ODP and then there's another number. And it's like a green, an environmental number. You could look them up. And those, the other number, which I wish I could remember, it's
HFC.
So yeah, they got rid of HFCs. Hydrofluorocarbons.
Ozone depletion potential. Yep. Global warming potential.
Global warming potential. That's the other one. So every refrigerant has a GDP, a global warming potential. R22 is pretty high. 410 is even relatively high. The ones that they use nowadays, the ammonia, carbon dioxide, butane, those have a pretty low GDP as well. And they have a zero ODP. Everything nowadays has zero ODP, but the GDP, they're trying to lower that. So the global warming potential numbers, they're trying to get refrigerants that, if they go into the atmosphere, don't hurt it. So it used to be, back in the 80s, techs would go and just like... Psst, and let Freon just go, and then
they didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't know. And what's actually really funny is R12, one of the first kinds of refrigerants that was widely used. It was used in cars, AC units. It was really widely used. You used to be able to buy it for like 50 cents a pound, and then this protocol went in that banned it from being produced. And from one day to the next, it went from 50 cents a pound to like $100 a pound. Just skyrocketed. Yeah. And you can still buy it today. Basically, if you're buying it, you're buying what's basically used. So nobody's producing those refrigerants anymore. They're just still out in circulation. Exactly.
Whatever supply is left.
Yep.
So eventually, as time goes on, it'll be
less and
depleted
less.
Depleted and yep. gone.
And there will also be less, there's obviously less equipment that uses it. So like when we replace air conditioning equipment, we generally are replacing equipment that ran on R22 and we're upgrading it to 410. And I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of years we get another refrigerant that upgrades 410. So
Yeah, that's the good thing about technology. It moves.
Yep.
And gets better and better.
Europe actually is ahead of us in that regard.
Yeah, they've that got makes sense.
They've got better refrigerants in their equipment. And who knows, that might help something like a heat pump, might make them better. Right now, I'm not too high on heat pumps, but...
Why is that?
Why is that? There's a bunch of reasons why. Let's start with the simplest one, the cost. You put a heat pump in with two or three Swifts, basically that... So, like your condenser, the thing outside... And then you got the two, put in two Swifts, the things that go up on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking easily 10, 15 grand. Whereas the AC we put in, you know, you put in the evaporator coil and the condenser and the line sets. I don't think we charge more than 5,000 for that. So, and ours will last a heck of a lot longer than that heat pump, too.
So why do you see so many of these heat pumps going in?
One, Nice Egg was pushing them quite hard. They were giving out rebates for them.
Okay. So then the government must want them.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. The other thing, too, is they... When you've got apartment buildings, and especially in a place like Ithaca or, well, Lansing. Lansing has a moratorium on natural gas. So if you want to put something in, it's either going to be propane, oil, or all electric.
So even if there's a natural gas line, you can't tap into it?
If there's a natural gas line on your property, you can tap into it. But you can't bring the... So say if the pipe ends two doors down, you can't bring it to your house. Can't extend it.
Oh, I guess I always thought those moratoriums are just on drilling itself. It's actually you can't build out infrastructure at all.
Right. So when you've got, like, Ithaca's throwing up apartment buildings like crazy, and when you need to heat them, really the cheapest way without adding more into the natural gas grid, which is difficult, you got to find the pipe, get into it. That's why heat pumps are such a common thing nowadays. However, if it gets cold enough, they really don't heat. That's another reason why I don't like them. If we have 2 weeks of single digits, you're going to be cold off of a heat pump.
What are they, shut? They shut down.
They work, but they don't really. They don't maintain. Like your furnace, if it's cold in here, you turn your furnace on, it'll reach that temperature. A heat pump, you might have it at a specific temperature, and it might drop and never. If it's cold enough, it might never come back up. It might be fighting to try to even maintain the drop.
Oh.
You know, so that's another reason why I don't like them. Third reason why I don't like them is they are a pain to work on. They're pretty much just one giant board. Whereas with our AC, everything's got parts. You got a compressor, you got a contactor, you got a capacitor, hard start, you got a motor. All those parts can be changed if they go bad. And so that's why I prefer AC.
It's basically like a giant motherboard from a computer. And if
if something goes bad, you can't
you
do anything.
You trash the whole thing.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, companies are just trashing their own product after 5 years. They don't keep it around. So say you buy a unit and it breaks 7 years down the road. Something that you paid 15 grand for probably shouldn't be breaking 7 years down the road, and then you can't get a replacement part, can't get a replacement board.
The warranties run out. You have to buy a brand new one.
The warranties, I think, are only like 2 to 3 years. The AC, I'm not 100% sure on the AC. I know it's at least 5 years, and I know with our furnaces, if you register them, their 10 years. And I think the same goes for the AC. Rood is the company that we put in. If you register them, I believe you got 10-year warranty on the parts. So if a part goes bad within 10 years, we can warranty it. Now, you'll pay the labor of us putting it in, but...
You aren't replacing the whole thing.
You aren't replacing the whole thing, and you aren't paying for the part, which parts these days can be expensive.
Yeah, especially as of recent.
Yep.
So. And then, well, you've always said how it's more of a... You're putting more electric draw from the grid.
The grid... Well... I mean, we've kind of seen it in our lifetime, the grid, what powers the grid is shrinking and more is being added to the grid. So at some point that can't work. When you've got less supply and more demand, at some point there's a breaking point.
Even if, I'll play devil's advocate, even if those heat pumps are more efficient, let's say they already have some sort of electrical unit and they're replacing it with a heat pump that's more efficient. Is there too many units that are going in that are replacing?
Right. There's more units being added to the grid.
Okay.
I mean, just look at Ithaca, for instance. How many apartment buildings have been built in the last 5 to 10 years?
A lot.
You know, it seems like they keep throwing up apartment complexes after apartment complexes, and they aren't stopping anytime soon. Yeah. And all of those are being run off of heat pumps. So you're adding... And Ithaca's grid is pretty old.
I was going to say, how old is that grid?
There are some lines in that go back to like the 30s.
Jeez.
And so, again, yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff breaks. And
it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, it really is. Generators are actually all the rage nowadays.
Well, yeah, I just told you. I tell you, we just bought a standby generator.
Yep.
My cousin is an electrician. I talked to, we spoke to him about what we should get, and he sized us up one. He located one, and we went and got it. And they're, you know, they aren't cheap, but.
No, but they give you a lot of peace of mind.
Yeah. You know, you kind of see, like you said, you know, you put two and two together. There's less supply, there's more demand. You can only do that for so long. There's right. going to be a point where.
There's a breaking point at some point.
Look at California. Yeah. I mean, that's. And I hope it doesn't. Maybe it won't come to that. And I hope it doesn't. And if we don't have to use it a lot, that's great. But if we do, I'm going to be glad we have a working one. That's and not trying to go buy one when everyone else is trying to buy one.
I will say you are kind of fortunate in the fact that Groton has its own substation, has its own electricity. But I mean, in our lifetime, I've seen Milliken get shut down. It wasn't Milliken when it got shut down, but we call it Milliken.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that powered, a lot of that power went to New York City, you know, what we didn't use. NYSEG has cut back on its workforce. You know, they used to have a whole crew of line guys. I think they have two that are on duty, you know, so those guys are constantly busy. There was another generator in Somerset, somewhere else in New York that's been shut down. You know, so like you said, you put two and two together, where is this extra power coming from?
There's a lot of solar going up, but that's there's not, a ton of you solar. Aren't going to be able to make up, I don't believe,
no.
You'll be able to make up for what we're losing.
Going to. And I mean, Ithaca is like the second cloudiest area in the country behind Seattle.
I know
that's
what I always find so ironic. It's like I've no issue with solar if you put it in the right place, like in the Southwest where it's desert,
right. Yeah,
and it's sunny for 330 days a year. Knock yourself out in New York, where
Central we have New York, yeah,
prime farmland, and it's cloudy from October till May.
Right.
I mean, just my opinion doesn't make a lot of sense, but there's a lot of money in that.
There is.
We just got the other day a letter in the mail, and we just throw them away. We've gotten so many of them over the years where a solar company will send us a Google Maps image of basically all the land surrounding the main farm. There's like 300 acres. It's all, you know, nice, flat, mm-hmm. pretty, you know, no crazy side hills.
Perfect like, for solar.
We want to put all, it's three phase that runs down this road. And then, like you said, the substation is not far away. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, oh, man, we want all this. And it's just like, we get them stopping in all the time. And it's just like, no, thank you, guys. You know, but the thing is you, when a farmer wants to retire and if he doesn't have anyone to take over the farm for him.
It's a great option.
Yeah. And, you know, you can't fault someone if financially they need to do it. You know,
right.
I'm sure they want to keep it in farmland, but if you got some guy who doesn't have much of retirement and he has 50, you know, a smaller farm, and he's like, "Hey, I can do solar and I can be set for the rest of my life." You can't fault the guy.
Oh, I totally agree.
At the same time, it crushes you. It's like, man, you know, it's perfect for farmland, but that's a whole nother story for.
Well, personally, I prefer looking at farmland than solar panels.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah, if you want to do them on your roof, you know. Go for it. Just, yeah, it's, I always kind of chuckle when I drive down 13, I see these array of solar panels and there's 2 feet of snow on it. I'm like, where's the guys out there shoveling the snow off? But yeah,
I don't know. Solar panels on roofs is another thing that I don't like, because you're adding, each one of those panels weighs probably between 50 and 75 pounds. You put that on your roof, and then you get ice and snow buildup. Think about how much weight is on your roof.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. That's a lot. And some of these...
A lot of those houses, especially downtown in Ithaca, were built in... You know, they're built properly because they're still standing.
Yeah.
You know, they actually use true 2x4s and whatnot. But still, that's a lot of weight to put on a roof.
That is very true. The one cool thing I must say from solar is it's given, I've had some friends even on this podcast who it's brought about different agricultural avenues for like grazing sheep and stuff underneath them, which is,
they can have sheep graze.
Yeah. So I have a couple of friends who have businesses now where they actually will go to a solar company, will put in 100 acres of solar panels, and they'll, my friends will say, "Hey, I can do all the maintenance," or maybe it's the person who owns the land. I'm not sure. They get in with the solar companies or with the landowners. I'll bring sheep in and maintain it, and they get payment for it. And yeah, I have a buddy, he and his fiance just moved back to Vermont, and they have quite a flock. I had her on, Nico, I had her on the podcast back in the winter. You can go back in the earlier episodes and find it. And they were all over New York State and up in New England. Now I think now that they're back in Vermont, they're kind of concentrating more in the New England area. But yeah, that's the one cool thing with that has come from solar. But yeah, from a electrical power standpoint, it doesn't make much sense to me.
Well, the other thing too, and this kind of gets a little bit political, we have so much natural gas underneath us that's the best fuel to burn, because it's dry when it burns. It's not wet like LP, liquid petroleum. But unfortunately, we can't access it.
Squash that, yeah. There's a lot of it, too.
We could be the Saudi Arabia of the world of natural gas if we wanted to.
Yeah. Like you said, it's another rabbit hole we could spend a long time chatting about, I guess we'll kind of move into the more of the, what does Brian like to do besides working on furnaces and hot water heaters and when you're just kind of laying low and.
Well, my modified soccer season just finished a couple weeks ago. I coached that in the afternoons in the fall. We did all right. We were 5-4-2, but one of the things I like is, so anybody who knows anything about Lansing or soccer around the area knows that Lansing's pretty good at soccer. We're the only program that still has a JV program. And so my kids is a true modified team of 7th and 8th graders. Every other team we played was 7th, 8th, 9th. There's definitely a jump from 7th to 9th grade. So we competed in every single game we played. Like, there was only one where we lost by 3 goals. And so I was really happy to see that our kids did so well against basically kids that are older and bigger and faster than them.
They competed.
Yeah, because at the next level, you get up to the next level, and then you look at our current varsity squad who's going to go play for the sectional title on set tomorrow. They've just absolutely just walked through their entire schedule, kind of like what Groton football has done
this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've done really well for the 8-man team. Yeah, they've been very impressive this year. I haven't seen a game, but I read about in the paper doing really well. So,
but I mean, you go back and look at I'm proud to be part of the Lansing soccer program. I've went through it and then I've been a coach in it, and we've been in the state tournament past, I don't know, 6 or 7 out of 8 years. There's only been, I think, 1 year that we weren't in it. So it's pretty fun.
Yeah, you guys are always a soccer powerhouse. Yeah. Still are, yeah. Yeah.
So I do a lot with that. That, and to be honest, that is kind of a year-round thing. We try to keep the kids playing year-round. So I coach during the winter and during the spring.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm.
Like at the indoor?
So I haven't done it in a couple years, but I used to have a team that I would coach on weekends at the field that we'd play in a league. And then spring, I would normally take just the high schoolers. We'd take 9th through 12th and make a spring team and go play in the BCSA league. So we'd play down in Binghamton and those teams. And normally we got our butts handed to us.
So that's good competition to play against.
Again, that's what it purely is to get them ready for the fall. Because when they play their fall schedule, it's not till they get to the playoffs that they actually see anybody decent.
Yeah.
So
I mean, you get beaten up by a bunch of the larger city schools, and you go and play some small Groton school. It's kind of a even though they probably don't even play us.
No, we do play you guys once, but like even T-Berg, who used to be a pretty good rival, I think Lansing beat them 4-1 this past year. You know, that Southern Cuga was their closest game at 3-1, and it really wasn't a close game.
How about Dryden? Is Dryden any good yet?
6-0. Well, a couple years ago, they swept Lansing on two very close games. I think they're like 1-0 or 2-1 games. But for the past 10 years, that one was like the anomaly. For the past 10 years, Dryden hasn't really produced much of a threat.
Hmm.
I think this past year was like 6-0, 4-0 or something like that. So yeah, I coach. I also play in adult leagues from time to time. I'm a goalkeeper. I prefer to play at the field than JM in Cortland, even though that's like 2 minutes from my house.
When you say the field, are you referring to the one in Lansing?
Yeah, that's the name of it.
Oh, it's called the field?
Yeah, there's the rink and the field.
Okay.
The whole thing is called the Community Recreation Center.
Okay. I haven't been there in a long time. Long time. Why do you like it better than JM?
Oh, it's softer. My body's getting old. The one at JM is like half inch of turf, maybe an inch, and then underneath it's concrete.
Ew,
so
yikes.
You dive, and then the next morning you're like, oh, my back. And you normally play on Sunday night, so like Monday morning is not a great start to the week.
You're all crippled up.
Pretty much. And then I also, in the spring, I coached the Lansing tennis as well. So I don't play as much as I used to of tennis. I wish I played a little bit more, but if I find somebody that wants to go hit, I'm always happy to go do that. So, and then I got my dog, do a little bit of woodworking in my basement. Yeah. I have ceramics as well. Have you ever seen all the ceramics in my basement?
No.
I'll have to show you that sometime. I got a bunch of molds. I actually don't have the kiln hooked up. I have a kiln downstairs.
You do?
Yeah. But I need a bigger panel. My panel is like a 100-amp panel that's completely filled. So I'd have to put in a new panel.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. The only time I was down there in your basement was helping you take pipe out that you had replaced.
Oh, yeah.
That was, I guess we never really... You just went down there, grabbed the pipe, and load on my truck. I think it was a hot...
Water heater.
Water heater, all that. Well, then, you got your car, too. Can't forget about your car. What is that? It's a 19... Let's see. Hold on. What is that? A 73?
Yeah.
73 Charger?
Yeah.
She's not the most aesthetically pleasing thing right now. I mean, yeah, like these images kind of...
Those images are a lot nicer than what I own.
But it's... It will look like that someday, right?
Yeah, someday. There you go. That one's not too bad, right where your finger was.
That one or that one?
That one. That one's not too bad.
That's kind of what...
That, I think mine had a white top, though, to it.
But it's the same color, right?
Yeah.
Can I zoom up? So.
Yeah. But mine, the one thing I do like, I don't think that one has it, is my rims kind of match the color, the exterior of my car.
Yeah, they do. They're kind of a yellowish gold tint.
So I might keep it that color just to keep the rims and matching, you know. Might up the value an extra $1,000 or something like that.
Is that a vinyl top?
Yep.
Yours doesn't have that, though.
It did at one point, but it doesn't have it now.
What is your end goal for this guy, for your Charger? In terms of, like, do you want it to look like this, or what are you going for?
I would like to try to get it restored to what it used to look like. Maybe put a couple of my own personal touches on it, but nothing. I don't want it to be, like, super flashy, if that's what you're wondering.
You want a classic look.
Yeah. I'm a classic kind of guy anyways.
It's It has a lot of legroom, which is really nice.
It does tall have people, a lot.
It is a lot. That thing's a boat, man.
Yeah. I drove it the next day, and I didn't have that stalling issue. That was the first time I ever had that stalling issue, where it just cut.
It must have been cold.
Yeah, I think it was the temperature.
She don't like the cold weather.
Nope. But she's got no acceleration, but once she gets up to speed, she hammers. She goes, I think I've taken that about 90. And it wasn't like it was like it was just fine. It was just cruising.
I'm sure she got... Do you know how many horses it has in it? I know I've... I wonder.
318? Because that's what it is. It's a 318.
Okay.
I will say I do like the black look too, but I think I might stick with the color.
Let's see. 280.
Is that what a 318 is?
1973 Dodge Charger SE440 V8.
Mine's not a 440 though. Mine's an SE318. Unless it is, and I don't know that. I'd have to double check.
Dodge Charger SE318 V8, yeah. Horsepower torque. Not sure. Well, anyway, she's got power. Mm-hmm. That's what matters. Lots of it.
Yep. Got to get it tuned up just a little bit more before I start working on the aesthetics. But doesn't have a lot of rust. Only 37, now about 38,000 miles.
That's crazy. Must be. It's just been a summer vehicle.
It was sitting in a garage for 25 years. The last state inspection I had on it was 97. So the guy who owned it, who I bought it from, literally had it in the farthest bay of his garage and wasn't working on it. He was working on other cars. and he needed the room. So he's like, all right, I'm getting rid of this. And he got, he gave me a great deal if you ask me, but he basically just got the money back that he put into it. So he could have gotten it more for it if he really wanted to.
He was just trying to move it and get out of his way, basically.
Yep. And I was the first one to see the ad and immediately got up there and was like, all right, I'll be back tomorrow with half of the payment and then the other half the next day. And he's like, all right, I'll hold it for you for the end of the week. And then if you don't come back, it's up for anybody else. I was like, sure. And so I came back the next day and the next day. And then I actually didn't move it till that weekend. I called a buddy who had a truck, rented a trailer from U-Haul, and we drove it to my parents. And it sat there for 2 winters. Yeah. Something like that.
Before you got into a shop.
Yeah. Because COVID happened.
No.
That didn't help.
Of course.
Yeah. But I bit the bullet, got it fixed, and yeah, she's fun to drive.
You'll have to be putting her away here pretty,
yeah,
pretty soon, though.
Yeah, I put the stabilizer into the fuel.
Wait.
Well, actually, I got to talk to the mechanic because he wanted to pull the engine and replace every gasket on it. Like, he got to the majority of it, like on the edges of it, the certain what was visible and rubber he replaced, but he'd like to take apart the engine completely and clean it and replace any gaskets that are still in there
because they're really old.
They're the original, yeah. So they're probably, since they haven't been touched, they're probably still functional to some degree, but it'd be a good idea to get them out of there.
Yeah. Like you said, you don't see any oil.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's probably, when you think about it, it's probably just, it's almost like it's sealed itself. Even though the seals exactly, are gone, right. They sealed themselves back up. Yeah, and it's if you took it apart, you would, it's just going to ooze oil from every orifice within the motor.
It's so old that it's.
Engine, I mean.
Yeah. It's so old, though, that it has its own seal.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah, yeah.
It's resealed itself.
But you're right. If you took it apart and put it back together, it would leak.
Yeah.
So, actually, my other car is in the shop right now for a power steering failure.
Is that why you're driving the white Saab?
Yeah. That's my mom. Yeah. Well, it was mine originally, but then I sold it to her. Got the red one. We're a Saab family.
Yeah. Don't tell a police officer that. Inside joke. Oh man, that was funny. Basically, I'll just say a little short little version of the story. Brian and I one day were driving. We were actually coming back. I met my sister and brother at Darien Lake. My sister lives like 30 minutes away. So Brian, I was going out, told Brian about it. I was like, yeah, I'll go to Darien Lake. So we went out there, rode on some rides, and saw my sister and brother and all that. And we're on our way back and get pulled over by a cop. I was speeding. I knew I was speeding. I didn't realize it until I looked at my GPS, saw I was going almost 20 miles an hour over the speed limit. Anyway, cop was cool. I said, yeah, I was speeding. He's like, okay. And then he starts ragging on me because I'm driving a Chevy. And I'm just laughing. It was funny. He's like, I had to pull you over because you were driving a Chevy, blah, 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 and you were speeding, blah, blah, blah. And so he was a really cool cop. And he comes back, gives me a ticket, and then he's like, how'd it go?
He's like, well, at least you weren't driving a Saab.
Yeah.
You he's pointed like, at me.
Yeah, the cop goes, hey, he gives me a ticket, and he's like, busting me about the Chevy. And he goes, there's the two worst brands that you can buy are a Chevy, and a Saab. And I turned to Brian, just started losing it, because Brian, you're the only person I've ever met, I think, in my life who drives a Saab. And the fact that the cop just randomly said that was just... So... Now, whenever I talk about Saab, that's the first thing that pops in my head is that cop's gonna hunt you down. He's like, I'll write you both the ticket just because you drive a Chevy and you drive a Saab. Anyway, call it a night?
I think we could call it a night.
All right. Sounds good, man. Well, thanks for finally making this happen, man.
No problem.
Good talking.
We got the audio and the video
I think everything's saved. I'm pretty confident. if it doesn't, then I guess you'll be getting a call from me. Hey, we got to do this again. Hopefully not. We should be really good at this by now.
I know, right?
But anyway, yeah, thanks for coming on, Brian. And thanks for watching or listening, however you are tuning in. And like I said, if all my contact information is in the description below, like and subscribe if you want. And catch you in the next episode. Thanks.